Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Joie de vivre, experimentation, and artistic expression. They're not just for young folks, never have been. And this week, they'll all be on display at the first inaugural Second Spring Arts Festival. It's a community-wide celebration for all ages of the artistic contributions made each and every day by seniors. Then it's time to turn up the volume to 11 at Ember Audio Video. Identical twin owners Blake Stewart and Chris Livengood are celebrating their fifth anniversary, bringing hi-fi to the triad and encouraging deep listening. Peter Karoff is back at the keyboard. He'll be exploring dynamics in classical music. And we wrap up things today with two of the Triad's hottest young singer-songwriters. Tyler Nail and Jonathan Luce will share their methods behind the sometimes maddening world of writing songs during the Winston-Salem Songwriter Sessions this weekend. But you'll hear them first, right here, live in Studio A, next after the news. Second Spring Arts Festival is a community-wide celebration of the achievements of people 60 and over in just about every art form imaginable. And the four-day festival at Haynes Brands Theater in Winston-Salem will showcase them all. Beginning Tuesday, May 14th, keynote speaker and National Center for Creative Aging founder Susan Perlstein talks arts, health, and wellness. Wednesday, it'll be literary arts followed by juried and non-juried visual shows at Delta Fine Arts Center on Thursday and Friday's musical and dance performances. Second Spring Arts Festival is free, and founder organizers Nancy Hall and Al Perry look forward to celebrating with people of all ages.
Our search has indicated that for a person to be creative or to remain creative through the life cycle is very beneficial in a number of ways, in particular for their health and mental health. So we will have on the program someone from the Sawtooth Center who will be talking about how the use of photography helps in grief counseling, just as one example of that. Of course, we have known for some time that music is often used with people with dementia, and they may not speak for years, and you play a familiar song that they know from their background, and they start singing and speaking again. So it does have tremendous potential.
I've heard that as well. How about you, the arts, what role does it play in your life, and why is it relevant? Why is it so important?
Well, it's relevant because I'm a writer, and I've always been a writer as long as I can remember. And I think if you continue to keep writing, whether it's for publication or for other reasons, you keep the brain active, you keep interested, and it helps your morale.
Winston-Salem's been ranked quite highly nationally as being a place to relocate or retire, right. And I'm wondering what role the arts plays in that.
Certainly to let the potential retiree community know that we have lots of things going on, not only for the younger age group, but for the seniors as well. I think that will turn out to be an economic enhancement. In fact, we will have a keynote speaker whose theme will probably include reference to the impact of the arts on the economy, whether it's local or statewide. So that's one of the themes that we are putting forward in the festival. Is not only helpful for the community at large and seniors, but that it has, as we said, an impact on the health and wellness of individuals as well as the community and economic impact.
The Arts Council did a pretty extensive study on that very subject, and I can't remember the numbers, but it was in the hundreds of millions of dollars
that's
of economic
true.
Impact.
And we will have Milton Rhodes to speak to that, and we also have Gail Anderson who will be talking on that.
I should point out Milton Rhodes, the current executive director of the Arts Council Winston-Salem Forsyth County, soon to step down, and Gail Anderson, Chamber of Commerce head, executive director of Chamber of Commerce, and both really well connected with the whole business scene as well as the art scene in the community.
We'll have three panels to respond to the keynote speaker. And one panel is on the economic impact, and the other one is on health and wellness. And then, of course, the third panel will be to have some of our local providers sort of give their best practices approach, like the Shepherd Center, for example.
One of the magic things about this, that thanks to Nancy's leadership, is she didn't decide that art was just visual art or just music and dance, just performance art. It's much more than that. That's why there's a literary day for the festival. It's a four-day festival, not just three. And I think the inclusion, that broad a spectrum of art. Remember, this is the city of arts and innovation. We want to add to that innovation. But we also want to work closely with there's so many good existing arts organizations in this town. And one of our goals is to work closely and partner with those groups as much as we can.
Of course, one of the things that I'm interested in, too, is having the well-established arts organization to begin more programming and to offer more programming for this age group. I know I have been on conferences and learned about other towns who were not as large or as financially able to do this. And I came back and said, you know, we're the city of the arts and innovation. Why can't we look at this growing population, older population, and begin to do some programming? So that's sort of a personal mission, I guess, that I have as well.
Where do you see this 5-10 years from now, Nancy, in terms of just that? Is it an umbrella organization? Are you looking to connect the various arts organizations to the senior community in a stronger way?
Yes, the latter. Yeah. In fact, you know, one of the things that one of our members has gotten excited about when she learned that there was a community center, I think it's in one of the northern states, that was devoted only to senior art, a senior art center. You know, in all of the classes that you might want to take would be available there.
You mentioned the keynote speaker, opening day speaker, I should say, Susan Perlstein. Have you met her?
I have heard her once when she was in Greensboro.
Okay. Yeah. What kind of person is she? Any themes that she refers to frequently?
Well, she is also on board with this whole notion about creativity throughout the life cycle and has written about that. And I guess you could say the guru for this research is geropsychiatrist Dr. Eugene Cohen. And she sort of trained under him. And, of course, I personally met him when he was in Chapel Hill a couple of years ago. Unfortunately, he's not living.
And she's carrying the torch.
Yes.
Susan, the founder of the National Center for Creative Aging,
right.
What stood out in her lecture, maybe in broad strokes or a philosophy that was kind of in keeping with what we've been talking about today?
Well, I think when I heard her, she was and is a person who is devoted to doing just what we're asking her to do, and that is to help establish a program for having seniors involved in more creative activities.
Oh, well, this is, I mean, you mentioned 4 days, a huge event. Well, that's a lot of work.
Actually, this is a dream, David, that I've had for about 7 or 8 years. And tried to get it going in a number of different ways with people I thought who could get it off the ground, was not successful. And finally, about 2 years ago, the editor of a local Triad resource guide, Trudy Atkins, had a feature on senior artists in the Triad. And at the bottom, she said, Nancy Hall, local advocate for seniors, is interested in putting on a festival for them. And if you're interested, call her. Well, 4 artists responded, and we began to meet. And that was the beginning.
So is the key finding the right people?
Partly, yeah. And having the passion to make it go. Because it's been a long haul. But, you know, we've added people along the way. Some people have dropped out. And so now we really do have just sort of a core of people who've been carrying the ball. I really see this as another opportunity for advocacy. You know, some of my friends more in the aging service groups think I've abandoned them by going into this area. But to me, this is just another example of advocacy on behalf of seniors.
Sure.
Nancy's what we have called all along the driving force in this, but in the last few weeks, driving is not a good enough term. It might be speeding, it might be crashing, it might be elbowing aside. It's the final weeks of getting ready for an event this size are incredibly stressful, and she's done a marvelous job with it. Our challenge going forward, I think you have to do much more than an annual festival. You have to be an ongoing organization serving in some way, doing things, and that's what we'll be focusing on in the months ahead. Not just another festival down the road, although we certainly might have one, but how do you establish the kind of program that she's talking about doing on an ongoing basis?
Mm-hmm. I think of organizations like Associated Artists of Winston-Salem, Sawtooth Center, which you already mentioned, forming those alliances.
Shepherd Center.
Shepherd Center, a great organization. So much going on. Let's talk about the different days and May 14th, opening day. And we'll feature the keynote speaker, Susan Perlstein, the founder of the National Center for Creative Aging. And then following her speech, what's going on?
Well, we will have the panelists. We will have 3 groups in a panel. The first panel will be on the impact of the arts on the economy. And that's where we have Gail and Milton and Scott Haynes, who is the COO at Bermuda Village.
Bermuda Village Retirement Community.
Yes. Then the second panel will deal with the impact of creativity on health and wellness, and that's where we will have Amanda Sullivan with the Sawtooth Program, the Director of Nursing at Novant Health.
And the next day, and I'm assuming this is kind of falling into your area of expertise, Al, as a writer yourself, the 15th, you really broadened this to include the literary arts, which is wonderful,
and
you get to recognize literary arts in all of its manifestations.
We've got what you'd expect. We've got two very prominent local authors, Emily Herring Wilson and Penelope Niven.
Those are pretty good ones.
They're very accomplished, and they're very accomplished, and they will make presentations, as will Mike Simpson, who's a part owner of Barnhill's. He's also a publisher. He owns Second Wind Publishing, and he's published several authors who are in our age category. But we're going to start in a very different way. We're going to start with a skit, scripted, directed by Nathan Ross Freeman. He's the head of Authoring Action, and four youngsters from Authoring Action will be on one side, and four people in our group will be on the other, and there'll be an intergenerational, debate, conflict, tension, but two different viewpoints.
Great.
As you can see, and then there'll be a discussion following it. That kicks the whole day off.
What a great idea. And then the closing day is a big day. Lots going on there. We're talking about the musical arts and dance and more. Tell me about New Horizons bands with the former conductor of the Winston-Salem Symphony, Peter Perret.
Yeah, he was one of the first persons I garnered last year, and he was very happy to participate in this. In fact, he started to recruit me to join the band, and I said, well, maybe I will after the festival is over. But I think that will be great.
Is it a wind band? What type of band is it?
I think it's all instrumentation.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
And I'm not familiar with the Snappy Tapper.
Oh, my goodness. You must know about them. Again, a group of older women who tap, and they have won state awards with their tap dancing. They are very much in demand.
All right. And Sharps and Flats at ballroom dancing.
Yeah. Ann Gill and David Piner, who's the director at Arbor Acres, make a very good team for the ballroom dancing. They are going to appear on the first day as well. Then there's another couple who will be doing ballroom dancing on the last day.
And I understand that in terms of artist submissions, it's for those artists 60 years in age over, but this is by no means a festival for seniors only.
Oh, of course not. This is for everyone. Of course, our first target group was the artists and performers. You know, we had to get them on board, and we've done that. Now the second large audience is the general public, all ages.
My thanks to Second Spring Arts Festival founders, organizers, Nancy Hall and Al Perry. Second Spring runs May 14th through the 17th at the Hanesbrands Theater, Sawtooth School for Visual Arts, and Delta Fine Arts in Winston-Salem. It's free, open to the public, and fun for arts enthusiasts from 2 to 102. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and later on in the show, we'll have two award-winning singer-songwriters live in Studio A. Tyler Nail and Jonathan Luce will give us a sample of what you can expect at this Saturday's Songwriter Sessions at the Community Arts Cafe, next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. Peter Karoff is here with a musical insider's look at the fascinating use of dynamics in classical music, and singer-songwriters Tyler Nail and Jonathan Luce will join me live in Studio A. But first, it's time to sit back and really listen. Ember Audio Video and Gallery on Trade Street in Winston-Salem is a high-performance stereo shop that partners with a host of other excellent hi-fi shops throughout the region to create home theater and home automation designs that'll rock your world, regardless of your budget. Ember owners, identical twins Chris Livengood and Blake Stewart, have created a friendly, inclusive, one-stop audio shop that's all about value, customer service, and art, and that formula seems to be working. They're celebrating their fifth year of providing great sound for the Triad. On display this month at Ember Gallery are the whimsical illustrative paintings of Daniel von Sagan and John Blackburn.
With Uncle Bob?
Yeah, our Uncle Bob, growing up.
always had a room that you couldn't see the walls because there was so many LPs and then later on CDs and tapes and equipment and reel-to-reel gear, I'm sure. I don't remember there being a time in my life where visiting Uncle Bob didn't entail looking around and marveling at all the stuff around.
Just an absurd amount of music.
Yeah. The largest bedroom in his house is literally a bed with just speakers and albums wall-to-wall, different turntables.
It's really impressive.
It's the best man cave I could imagine.
For what it's worth, I think that kind of just let us know that, yes, it's possible for people to be unhealthily absorbed with music.
Good morning, yesterday.
Seattle has a road that is near the college. It's called Roosevelt Way, and it's just nothing but like hi-fi shops for like two blocks. And I made it past the first one, and I never made it past the second one. I walked in and sat down and had a very friendly, helpful guy who recognized I was 18 and broke, who still wanted to expose me, sit me down and on probably a $125,000 system, play a live David Bowie recording. And, you know, this is all completely new to me, and it was... It raised hackles. It was amazing. It was impressive. It was fun. It was jaw-dropping. And I kind of left in a daze and went home and just immediately started doing research, and I never stopped. So we started talking about opening a business. He's my identical twin brother, so I obviously wanted to do something with him. And I really moved back here because I wanted to, you know, be closer to my brother and be closer to my family in general. And it only made sense that we would maybe start a stereo shop. We grew up with a mother who's a silversmith and owned a couple of shops on Trade Street growing up from the time we were about 6 years old. And she just does, you know, phenomenal work, and she's been doing it for a long time. She's had an association with Piedmont Craftsmen, and, you know, we'd go to big shows and there'd be booths, and all of her neighbors, other, you know, gallerists were very friendly and stop by and say hey to the kids. And it was just a really positive experience, and it gave us a very sort of flat way of life take on art. It just sort of surrounded us and it sort of made sense. And we spent a lot of time, you know, throughout our lives on Trade Street, whether it was spending time with our mother there, you know, at the two shops, or going to, you know, concerts at some of the local venues on Trade Street. So, yeah, it made sense to gravitate there and do that.
So, Blake, in terms of finding that ideal location, you've settled on Trade Street. Now, tell me about the scene down there.
For us, we really liked the Shun up at the corner of 7th and Trade because it's starting to expand down there. It's no longer an arts district that's sort of restricted between, let's say, you know, 4th and 6th. And so as we've had so many wonderful small businesses open and more residences centered up past 6th, it made sense to be sort of the second gallery in addition to Intersection that's up on that side.
The general vibe I'm getting, I mean, outsider looking in, is kind of new models for growth.
Yeah, and I think going to something my mother always raised me with, an old adage, is that there's always pain on the cusp of change. And so while there may be some shutting down of businesses or relocating of businesses, as in our case, I think that overall this is sort of reflecting a changing of the guard. You know, I think Chris and I have been informed by all the galleries and people who've put in their years and effort into keeping that place going and vital. And we're going to hopefully continue that honorable tradition down there.
It's a neat look. I'm just thinking, looking through the window, it's. Well, I've always been a minimalist, you know.
Yeah.
Describe it. I mean, the interior.
What you're seeing is the visual representation of us trying not to screw this up.
Yeah.
One little thing at a time. And it's the same way that we handle, you know, any sort of consultation stuff in our business is just do as little as you possibly can until you know exactly what you want to do. Be patient. You know, sort of implement changes as you go. And sort of we've gotten into this 1,000-square-foot main area that sort of forms our gallery slash hi-fi shop. And it's a box. I mean, it's 23 feet by 55 feet. It's, you know, 10-foot ceilings. And so basically we moved in there and we said, you know, this is going to be what we put into it. And so let's start lean. And, you know, that's great for our budget as far as converting everything. We like to stay debt-free. But it's also really great for making good decisions. And we constantly, if you ever walk in there, you'll notice we ask you, you know, what do you think? What do you like? What don't you like? We're really open to letting the community make decisions hand in hand with what we want and sort of letting it become a reflection of what's on Trade Street and a reflection of sort of our little particular interest, our avenue in that. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you're seeing.
There are many different media that you can play music back on, and they're not equal. But you don't have to necessarily pay a huge dollar to get great quality. certainly you can just blanket statement say an MP3 is not as good as vinyl because there's not as much information in MP3. In fact, the term MP3 refers to the fact, the method of compressing that audio and, you know, dithering down that information. So it's not necessarily the way it would be in a master recording of itself. So in vinyl, you have... It's literally analog means it's that it's analogous to actually being played with the grooves in a record. It represents the left and right channel. It's organic. The more refined your turntable and the stylus thereon, the more information you can get out of those grooves.
There's nothing wrong with owning an iPod, with making it easy to listen to more music. I highly encourage you to listen to as much music as humanly possible. If we could all have awesome soundtracks to our lives and walk about our day doing, you know, whatever it is that we're doing to that soundtrack, then great. More music is a good thing. It's that everybody has those 50 Desert Island albums or 100 Desert Island albums, or in Michael's case, way too many to count. And I think it makes a lot of sense to maybe... You know, the times that you sit down with your partner or your friends or your kids and you're trying to kind of open a door to why you love something, whether it's, you know, a Don Henley recording or Mahler or whatever. If you are doing it in a way that is, you know, richer and more musical and more tonally balanced and almost holographic, if you sit down with that person and both of you at the end of a recording just say, gosh, that is amazing, you know, that's a really beautiful... How often does that happen in life? It should happen more, in my opinion. And it does not preclude or even really have a conversation that mixes in with the whole iPod thing. Like, keep your iPods. I think they're wonderful. I personally think they're great. But what they've done is they've just allowed us to listen to more music, and that's a positive thing. We want to kind of reinforce listening to your music in a more satisfying way.
Ember Audio Video co-owners Blake Stewart and his identical twin brother, co-owner Chris Livengood. They're located at 690 Trade Street in Winston-Salem. And through the end of May at the Ember Gallery there, amidst the gorgeous stereo equipment, you'll find the whimsical illustrative paintings of Daniel von Sagan and John Blackburn. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and after this short break, it's time for Understanding Classical Music with Karoff at the keyboard and a look at dynamics in classical music. Then it's everything you ever wanted to know about songwriting but were afraid to ask with Tyler Nail and Jonathan Luce when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and this is Karoff at the Keyboard.
Hi there. Today I'd like to talk with you about a word that we use in the musical world to describe the louds and softs of music, and that word is dynamics. It's quite obvious that the loudness with which you play a particular passage would deeply affect its meaning and impact. Just imagine, I don't know, the beginning of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, that dramatic opening, and just imagine if it were... It has a completely different impact. And so dynamics are very, very important in how we perceive music, how we feel the expressive power of music. Likewise, imagine a delicate piece like Debussy's Clair de Lune. And you know what I'm going to do. Imagine it extra loud. Yikes. It has a completely different effect. So like saying a word to a friend loud or saying that same word soft, it has a different meaning, a different emotional content. Likewise, the dynamics with which a composer asks us to perform the music completely change the way we experience it. But you see, there's more to dynamics than simply how loud or how soft. Most of the music we hear, after all, is not just one note at a time, but layers of sounds. And so quite often, a composer will have multiple layers of dynamics at the same time. Here's a piece by Robert Schumann from about, 1830. A beautiful piano piece called simply Romance. Now, the melody is actually not at the top of this composition. It's kind of buried in the middle down here. And the accompaniment is both above it and below it. And so here again, here's the piece, the melody in the middle and the accompaniment surrounding it. Now, let's just pretend that there were no dynamic differences there, and if all the notes were exactly the same volume, it would be actually completely incoherent. Listen to it once. This is the same exact piece, but all the dynamics taken out of it. Yuck. So you can see that with music that has lots going on, harmony, melody, dynamics serve not simply to make it this part's loud and this part soft, but also to highlight certain aspects of the musical texture. In this case, the melody in the middle, more prominent. So we can think of dynamics almost like shading in painting. You know, if you look at a painting and some areas of the painting are more bright and they seem to be more prominent or more in the foreground, and areas more darkly shaded recede into the background. And that's exactly what happens in musical dynamics. Here's another example. This is a piece by Rachmaninoff from the early 20th century, and all kinds of dynamics going on in here. First of all, very much like in the Schumann piece, the melody is down below, and so if you're not careful, the accompaniment would actually hide the melody, except thanks to dynamics, we can hear the melody more prominently. Without dynamics, you would just hear the... So we have dynamics then for the shading, for the more prominent melody, but also within each level, within each dynamic level, let's say, you have lots of ebb and flow of dynamics. You have what we call, simply phrasing or expression, so that the melody isn't just a series of notes, but rather a kind of expressive, very personal, very warm, sighing, pleading melody, again, thanks to the dynamic inflections. So you see, this term dynamics, I can also just simply say the louds and softs within music, are very, very important from the composer's perspective, which material, which ideas, which motives, which melodies he wants or she wants more prominently heard, but also from the performer's side. How do we make it expressive? How do we make it live? How do we make it seem as if it's speaking to us through sound? Musical dynamics.
Wake Forest University professor and Steinway artist, Mr. Peter Karoff at the keyboard. I'm David Ford, and this is Triad Arts Weekend. Songwriter sessions are typically a chance to be a fly on the wall as musicians perform their original songs and then share their thoughts, feelings, and opinions on the craft of songwriting. This Saturday night, May 11th, those four walls will be the Community Arts Cafe.
Winston-Salem Songwriter Sessions kicks off at 8 o'clock with performances by local artists Tyler Nail, Jonathan Luce, Kike Rodriguez-Pastor, and Andrew Lazar. I'll be emceeing the event this Saturday, and after each song, I'll ask a question or two of the artists, and then audience members can chime in too with questions or comments of their own. Tyler and Jonathan recently joined me live in Studio A. Tyler's a Winston-Salem native, songwriter, singer, guitarist, and drummer in several performing acts in town. He fronts his original project, simply titled Tyler Nail, and so far he's independently released 4 albums, one of which, entitled Winter to Winter, can be found on iTunes. He also fronts the Americana cover band The Bulls Hitters, who perform at Bulls Tavern in Winston-Salem every Thursday night at 9:30. With Tyler at Bulls Tavern is guitarist, singer-songwriter Jonathan Luce. He was raised in Advance, and he's a solo artist as well as the lead guitarist and supporting singer in Tyler Nail's band. John's currently recording his first full-length album, set to be released later this year. He performs regularly in the Triad with various acts, often at the Turntable in Jamestown and Cranky's Coffee in Winston-Salem. How did this come about? Tyler, kick it off, or John, the germ of an idea to get this thing going.
We've been a part of events like this before. I used to go to one of these things in Asheville, and it's a common event, you know, that people do all over the place, where they just have songwriters come in and talk about songwriting and stuff. And there's so many songwriters in the area, and we haven't done one here since last winter, I guess.
Last January.
So
okay,
we figured good enough time to have another one.
Yeah, coming up on the heels of spring here. Do you all write individually and as a team?
We have not yet attempted to write lyrics as a team. Like, okay. we've talked about it, and John and I discuss songwriting all the time. But we both are very individual writers, and every writer has a, you know, individual process, and it's all so different and interesting. So we both just write songs, and we then, you know, work on them together and play over each other's songs.
You know, when I took a composition class once, and the first thing the teacher asked when he walked in the room was, why do we do this? Why do you write songs? It's not easy to do.
It's not easy to do, but it's interesting to do, and we talk about that often, about what is the purpose of doing the songwriting or anything like that. And I think you can overanalyze that question a little too much, but eventually it just comes down to something that you're interested in and want to communicate with somebody else, with an audience. And it's just, you know, what are we doing? Everybody's doing something.
Yeah.
People have an impulse to want to be creative, and I think most people have an impulse to want to be a crafter of some kind, of something. And that's just what we were, I guess I'd say, fortunate enough to find ourselves doing over a while. You know, we got to where we could write songs, and it's become important to us.
Love was a pretty poison, and I a little child, and she was the silver teaspoon that set the poison wild, and I got stay with her. Always be the first to throw a stone. Never leaving well enough alone. Love was a bed of flowers, it made a fool of me, and I stayed in bed for hours, too blind and still to see that they were dying. She was a pretty river, as pretty as can be, and I was a river boulder, too heavy for the sea. I was crying. Never going anywhere but home. feathers left. And she was the mighty killer that took the bluebird's breath and left me bleeding. She was a pretty water, as pretty as can be. And she left four bigger waters still flowing over me. She's still leaving. Running like a dog out of the rain. Scared of staying scared. Was the heavy snow wind that stopped me every time I tried to kiss her. She was a pretty ocean, as pretty as can be. And she left me in the river, still looking for the sea. And God, I miss her.
It would be interesting to kind of eliminate the traditional barrier of audience versus performer in this one, and I think having a moderator like you might help facilitate some kind of conversation. I think we're going to do a question and answer at some point, so that might be a different aspect of the whole thing, and we'll really be able to get into an open conversation among one another about the craft and about the creative process and everything.
Have you ever read that book, Songwriters on Songwriting?
No.
It's interesting. I mean, it's everybody's in there. Paul Simon, Neil Young, I mean, Joni Mitchell. And everyone's approach is different. You see a little overlap here and there, but it's amazing to me how from some of those composers who have to wait for the song to pretty much completely form inside them until it just has to get out, and then they write it down, to those who chip away and craft at it for months and months and months. Talk about your all's approach to composition a little bit.
My most common approach is to, I'll mess with the guitar, I'll come up with some melodies or progressions, and that is a separate thing from sort of brainstorming throughout the day, writing down little lines or thoughts that I find pretty or that I like.
And when you say progressions, Tyler, for the non-musician, you're talking about harmonic, the harmonies that as they move along.
Yeah, chords, just order of chords and like little things that you can do, melodies, building a melody around chords on a guitar and stuff. So those two things start out separately, usually, where I'll write down thoughts that I like, and I'll build melodies and chord progressions, and then later, as I let them kind of sit for a while and let them form in my mind, they'll end up coming together at some point. Some random line will meet some chord progression, and that will start to build a song. That's my most common approach, but there are changes where suddenly I'll just hit a chord and then a whole song will come out, or I'll have a chord progression for years and just force myself to write something that I just feel like might fit, and then maybe it will or maybe it won't. But more commonly, I like to try to connect the two that have been sitting for a while and sort of, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Percolating?
Fester?
Fermenting.
Fermenting.
Yeah.
And well, that's interesting, because even within our one singer-songwriter here, Tyler Nail, just you've expressed three different ways of approaching a song within the same artist. How about you, John? What's your approach?
It's often similar, I think, like you were saying about the different songwriters. There's always a nice blend of intention and spontaneity that comes with the songwriting. So it might, for me, it's kind of similar. I might have a melody that just pops into my head, or comes from playing the guitar or something, and then words might come. Maybe I'm just writing or something, and you hear the melody of a song, and you kind of think, what does this require lyrically? What kind of tone, what kind of sentiment does this need to convey? And then the big thing for me in terms of process in the last year or so has been able to figure out a way to get past the mental wall of writer's block by, you know, making yourself write all the time, regardless of, you know, whether it's going to be in a song or not. I think a lot of artists come into songwriting and they go put the pen to the paper and they think, you know, this needs to be a song, and that can be overwhelming. But if you, you know, wake up early when your brain isn't, you know, fully going and you just start writing and you write no matter what, you tend to get little ideas. And I think breaking down that wall has been helpful for me, because the more you write, the more little things pop out that you can chase and follow in terms of an idea and maybe a line with another melody that you've been working on.
Hmm.
And also the more you write, I think the more you orient yourself going through the world and observing things in that lyrical mindset, so that you are sort of opening the door to inspiration, or maybe it's more of a kicking down the door. I don't know to what extent it's either of those things. It's probably a 50% you meet halfway with inspiration, or intention and spontaneity.
That's interesting, that whole concept of developing an openness to that whole observer mindset, where you're grabbing things on a day-to-day that you can actually make it a habit.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the essence of creativity is a lot of that being deliberate and being focused on what you're doing with your mind, what you're thinking about, so that you can allow those little sparks that you don't really know where they come from to kind of grab you and amaze you and inspire you. But I think you have to orient yourself towards that.
Portland, where are you now? This Red Valley sun setting down. There's a whiskey to heal and a calm on.
Commonly, I guess, songwriting consists of writing melodies, writing chord progressions, and writing lyrics, and then also considering the way to deliver those things. It's like, usually, I guess for me anyway, it's like four art forms in one presentation. It's how you say the words, it's how you sing the words, and how you draw out these things, these emotions, it's how you deliver things. And it's also the thing that I find the most interesting about songwriting is it's hard to articulate how to say what is quality about choosing words. There's plenty of words to choose from, and you can't say that this group of words above another is better or worse. It's just interesting how songwriting works. That's a whole nother art form, and building a melody, it being pleasing to us as Westerners or other people as Easterners, it's all very interesting, and it's more than one thing.
And at essence, there, which always fascinated me, is it's that blending of all those elements, all those art forms, in a way that just makes you think, oh yeah, of course that's a song that's been there forever, right?
Mm.
To get it that good,
yeah.
So it's natural. You don't even think about it. You get a chance to, you know, record these songs, go back, hear them again, or if they're written down, obviously look at them again. But years down the road, have you had that experience, Tyler or John, where you look back on a tune you've written years ago and thought, this is really, really good. You know, I'm really proud of this. Or conversely, what the heck was I thinking?
More commonly, I become ashamed of a song about 3 months after I write it.
Yeah.
People are constantly changing, and there's a lot of songs. When I try to play a show, like an original show, I have a lot of songs to choose from, and most of the songs I've written up to now, I don't want to perform. You know, a lot of them, because I'm in a different place now, and it doesn't feel as, I don't want to say honest or authentic, it just doesn't feel as fulfilling to me to try to tap into these old songs that represent, I guess, a different time in my life. I'm more excited about the ones I'm writing right now.
She was bound for Texarkana. I was staying out of the water, bound to die in Caroline. She told me stories of New England, about the winters in Rhode Island. And she'd think of the ones she left. Valentina, where'd you come from? Tell me something I don't know. Valentina, where'd you come from? Valentina, where'd you go? There were no diamonds. Soon there was no her and him. She was single in Arizona. Watched the summer burn in Maine. She said, if I ever came up, Valentina, where'd you come from? Tell me something I don't know. Valentina, where'd you come from? Valentina, where'd you go? Me
something I don't know. Valentina, where'd you come from? Valentina, where'd you go? Valentina, where'd you go? Valentina, where'd you go?
Singer-songwriters Tyler Nail and Jonathan Luce. Together, Tyler and Jonathan have organized Winston-Salem Songwriter Sessions this Saturday night, May 11th at 8 o'clock in the Community Arts Cafe in downtown Winston-Salem. Tickets are just $10. Local artists Kike Rodriguez-Pastor and Andrew Lazar will join Tyler and Jonathan on Saturday when each artist will perform original songs of their own and then take questions from the audience about songwriting and whatever else comes to mind. I'll be moderating the event, and you'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Well, that's all for today's program. Our technical producer is Eddie Garcia, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find podcasts of Triad Arts Weekend, along with pictures and lots of helpful links, on our website, WFDD.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.